In addition to being Halloween, October 31st is also the anniversary of the strange death of Wisconsin legend, Harry Houdini.
That's right. Matthew Carpenter is very well aware of that connection between Halloween and Houdini. He is the executive director of the History Museum at the Castle in Appleton, which has an ongoing Houdini exhibit. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gene. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to start out with the Wisconsin connection, you know, because I read some biographies, real brief ones, of Houdini in preparation for this. And there was one that says he was born in Hungary and then they moved to Milwaukee. Another one says he was born in Appleton. What is the Wisconsin connection?
Yeah, there's some confusion there. And in part, it's because Houdini created that confusion. He did that with a lot of things. Houdini, it's pretty well understood now that Houdini was born in Budapest, Hungary in 1874, and the family immigrated to Wisconsin, immigrated to Appleton when Houdini was 4 years old. At that time, his father, Rabbi Weiss, took a job with the local Reformed Jewish congregation in Appleton, so he became the first resident rabbi here in Appleton. And the family really only lived here in Appleton for 4 short years. His father was fired from the congregation, and then they moved on to Milwaukee and then later to New York. But those 4 years in Appleton were very important to young Eric Weiss, later Harry Houdini, really made an impression on him. And in his heart, Appleton was his hometown. So he kind of blurred the lines at various times. Sometimes he was a European sensation, and other times he was an American appearing in Europe.
And you said that he added to the confusion, and one of the things he did was he claimed to have been born in Appleton, right?
Right, right. And it's clearly not the case. I mean, the historians have documented the immigration records. He came across on a ship that landed in New York, and all of that's pretty well documented.
So let's talk about after he left Appleton in Milwaukee, moves to New York, and I think a lot of folks are familiar with kind of the arc of his career. He became famous as a magician, and then later went on to become famous in some other things too. But could we talk about kind of the context of just how famous he was? I mean, 80 some years after his death, we're still talking about him, and that says something.
It really does. Yeah, that's, I think, a very important point. This guy was, people say he was the highest paid performer of his day. Certainly that was true in his vaudeville career. So he was a superstar of his time, and kind of like some of the superstars today, you know, it was part his talent for performance, but in part it was his ability to read his audience and to continually reinvent himself and look for new ways to stay on that cutting edge of a changing world. So he was constantly reinventing himself to remain relevant. And as you say, you know, what is it, 87 years or so later, we're still talking about him. His name is in the dictionary. You know, he's to some degree a household name, although as you pointed out, there's a lot of misinformation and confusion about the details of his life.
And let's start out talking about kind of the earlier part of his career. I want to get into some of the spiritualism stuff that he dealt with in the 1920s. But what most people think of Houdini, they think of him as escaping from, you know, water torture cells and manacles and handcuffs and all those things. And that was a big deal at the time, this whole idea of escaping from things. Houdini sort of lifted that to a whole new level where his name became synonymous with that sort of thing.
Yeah, he did. I think at the time, magic historians talk about sort of the stereotypical gentleman in a tuxedo or dress wear, politely performing magic on a stage. Houdini certainly wore that tuxedo, but he also stripped down to a loincloth and performed nearly nude.
Pretty racy stuff for
racy stuff. Yeah. So, he broke the the stereotype, and he created a whole new genre of whether you call it magic or escape performance.
And one of the other things he did was he was a magician. He did all of these tricks, but at the same time, he was very interested in sort of fraud. And he was interested in explaining how some of these tricks were done.
Yeah, this organization has been criticized for exposing some of Houdini's tricks in an exhibit that we opened in 2004. But it's pretty ironic because Houdini himself, as you say, he was writing books and articles. In fact, I think it was a 1914 Ladies' Home Journal article.
I remember that one.
Mass market as you can get, right? So he's explaining how to escape from handcuffs and ropes. And he went on to write a number of books that on some level divulge the secrets of the trade. He was always pretty careful to walk a line where, you know, maybe he would divulge the secrets of something his competitors were doing, but he'd protect some of the details of his own work. But definitely, he was sort of surgically using those exposés or those insights into the performance art to further his own career.
And then later on, of course, there was a spiritualism craze in the U.S. in the 1920s with Ouija boards and interest in fairies and all of that. And he was very interested in exposing that. And he was not a believer. And he offered money, as I recall, you know, for anybody who could prove that it existed. And that was something he was deeply interested in.
Yeah. You know, the spiritualist craze began in the mid part of the 19th century, and the funny thing is, again, it's an irony that at the start of Houdini's career, before he actually made it, he and his wife Bess were both performing as mediums or essentially fraudulent spiritualists. So they were taking people's money to help those people connect with their dead loved ones. Well, cut forward, a couple of decades. By that time, Houdini has certainly matured, and he's not as desperate to earn a living. But he's also experienced a very profound and painful loss of his beloved mother. And so I think there was a desire to maintain the connection to his mother that I suspect sparked his interest in spiritualism. But he ultimately had a feeling that it wasn't possible. He never quite let go of the idea of it, but he really felt strongly that people who were benefiting from other people's grief essentially exploiting people's grief by claiming to be able to speak to their dead loved ones were not people who should be tolerated. And yeah, he worked through the Scientific American, organization and that journal to make a challenge to mediums and say, if you can prove that you have supernatural abilities, as you can speak to the dead, that we'll give you this prize. And no one was ever able to successfully prove that was possible. No one ever claimed the prize. He also became a social activist, and in Washington, D.C., he worked very hard to create laws that prohibited fraudulent mediums from operating. He would go to such lengths as to dress in disguise and infiltrate the parlors of the various mediums of the day and expose them in front of audiences. So,
well, and I'm afraid we have to wrap it up here, Matt. But Houdini died on October 31st, 1926, and he never did come back from the other side.
He didn't.
Matthew Carpenter is the executive director of the History Museum at the Castle in Appleton.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it's Food Friday. We're talking to a chef about the 50 foods he thinks are the essentials of good taste and how to cook with them.
We'll also talk about legendary composer, pianist, and band leader Duke Ellington. We'll talk about his life and his influence on American music.
And it's our roundup of the state's top news stories with WPR News Director Michael Leland.
That's coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we're talking to paranormal expert Chad Lewis about some of the haunted places around Wisconsin. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.